Пуст, а не подойдут ко мне. Do you understand what I just said? Unless you speak Russian, you would never be able to understand the words, let the little children come to me. Jesus wants to speak to all children in every land, and your church's Sunday school can help. For just $5 per book, your students can adopt an LHF mission project that will provide Bible storybooks to waiting children in other lands. Learn more at lhfmissions.org/children.
Listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rachel.
Today is a story time with Sarah Day, and neither of you have seen my notes, so this
no,
is
I don't even remember our topic. I have no idea what we're discussing today. You're getting a genuine react.
This is so fun. Normally you guys are like on top with what I'm talking about.
I'm always genuine though.
That's true.
I'm not. I like to be prepared.
Yeah, Rachel always follows along my notes.
I'm willing to sacrifice authenticity for preparedness.
Yeah, I think I'm in that boat too. Anyway, today is the Real Housewives of Saxony.
Oh,
brilliant.
Very exciting.
Because J.S. Bach's commemoration day is July 28th.
That's right.
In the church year, because that's the day that he died. And we always talk about J.S. Bach, but we never talk about his wives. And so we are going to talk about J.S. Bach's two wives. No, he was not married at the same time. Somebody snarky asked me that question.
I know. It sounds really weird when you say it like that.
He had two wives. One of them died. Well, I mean, both of them died eventually, but he was not married at the same time to both of them. Just putting that out there, guys. This is very all above board.
Yes.
Can I say, this has been an episode that I have been looking forward to for a long time. Anyone who has ever been a beginning piano student will have. Because the first thing you encounter when you're learning to play classical music are our selections from J.S. Bach's Notebook for Anna Magdalena Bach, which just seems like the most romantic thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know that he wrote it for her. And, you know, it's like, okay, I want to know this story. The story behind the little beginning piano book that still continues to show up on music stands all over the world.
Yeah. We highlight J.S. Bach quite a bit on KFUO, on the Coffee Hour. We have like whole Bach weeks most years. This year kind of got away from us because of everything. But so today is for the unsung heroes, the women behind J.S. Bach and all of his musical genius. This was really exciting. I don't actually think I knew that he had two wives until I looked at this as a potential topic for this episode. Hmm. I knew about Anna Magdalena because of the Notebook, right? But I didn't know that he was married before her. So here are their stories.
Okay.
Maria Barbara Bach, who my brain keeps wanting to call Maria Barbara Bush, but that's totally the wrong century and the wrong country. Like glancing at it, my brain like glitches for a hot second.
I didn't know Barbara was a German name.
Yeah. There's a whole song on TikTok, Instagram right now about
I thought that
Barbara.
Was about rhubarb.
But it's Barbara has a rhubarb shop. Sorry, total cultural context thing. In 10 years, nobody will know what we're talking about
Here's
right now.
Anyway, I didn't know it. Okay.
A link to this song in the show notes. It's totally random.
It's a clean song. It's
Barbara
very cute.
It is a German name. It is the one song that if we play it in our house, everyone smiles all at once.
It's a really fun song. It's so catchy. But anyway, this is not about TikTok trends.
Okay.
This is about Maria Barbara Bach. Mm-hmm. So fun fact, she did not have to change her last name when she got married because she was Bach's second cousin. So she was born and died Maria Barbara Bach. She was the daughter of J.S. Bach's father's cousin, Johann Michael Bach. So they're second cousins. She was born October 30th, 1684, at Gehren-Schwarzburg-Sonderhausen to Catherine and Michael Bach. And her father, Michael, was an organist and a town scribe. Music runs in this family, obviously. She was orphaned at an early age, so she went to live with her relatives in Arnstadt. And the Bach family was all pretty close-knit, so she probably, they probably knew each other at some point in their lives, just because, you know, second cousins, when you're in a close-knit family, you end up knowing each other, I suppose. So they met in Arnstadt after he was appointed, after J.S. Bach was appointed organist there in 1703. And there's this really funny story. Apparently, Arnstadt authorities were called on J.S. Bach in 1706 because he had invited a, quote, strange maiden to the church organ loft to, quote, make music. And historians think that that was Maria. So they were like hanging out doing music in the church organ loft, and they got the authorities called on them. Yeah. I don't know if that's true or not, but that was a story I found in one of the blog posts.
This and that's strange maiden. Like, I can see someone shining a flashlight in the car window and bluff over the city.
What are you kids doing?
What's their age difference?
They are the same age. Maria, I believe, is a month older. There's a month difference.
Okay.
So romantic, though. Getting busted by the authorities for making music in the loft.
Right? Yeah. No. I'm sorry. I have this wrong. Maria is several months older. She was born October 30th, 1684. J.S. Bach was born March 31st, 1685.
But they're still, that's...
They're very close in very age. Close that's in the age. Point.
This, though, I mean, and that's the sort of thing that, I can picture this.
Teenagers.
Exactly.
So they got more acquainted when Bach was the organist at Mühlhausen's St. Blasius Church. And then she was 23 when she married Bach on October 17th, 1707. We don't know a lot about her life or their marriage, as goes the stories for women in these days. Never know a whole lot about them. But we do know she was a singer. He apparently had a thing for singers because Anna Magdalena was also a singer. But I suppose in these days, a lot of people probably would have been singers of some nature. They moved to Weimar in 1708 and they needed a housekeeper. Maria's sister, Friedelina Margarita Bach, came to live with them as their housekeeper and stayed there until she died. So eventually she's the housekeeper when Anna Magdalena is the wife of the house, which is an interesting situation. I don't know how I would feel about that, but I guess they're all family, so it works out. They were apparently very happy and contented and lived at Kirchen, where they moved in 1717. And now I have to tell you about their children, because a lot of the stories, when you start researching Bach's wives, they're all like, Bach had 20 kids. Which is true. I mean, there were 20 babies that were born, and not all of them lived, well, several of them didn't live past being babies, and not all of them lived to adulthood either. So Maria and J.S. Bach had 7 children. 3 of them died in infancy. So Katharina Dorothea, I love that name. I have a niece, Dorothea, was born in 1708. She lived for a little while. She played harpsichord. Quote,
how we all are. We all live for a little while.
She lived to adulthood. I should put it that way. Sorry, this is very, very vague. She played the harpsichord, quote, not badly, according to a letter from J.S. Bach. So she was musical to a certain extent.
I don't know, though. I feel like there's a bit of a... I don't know. Maybe coming from Bach, that is a tremendous compliment, or maybe that is a bit of a
dig.
Their Bach is so exacting that when he looks at you and goes, not too badly, then you're like,
okay. Okay, I think you're probably right.
Or alternatively, to be the only Bach who plays the harpsichord sort of okay would be very, very...
Yeah, it could be. He's like, well, I can't say it's good, but I'll just say it's not too badly.
Underhanded compliment.
Who knows? We'll put the best construction on it and say that it was a fine compliment from musical genius of the age.
Yeah, there you go. Wilhelm Friedman was their second child. He was born in November 1710. He also lived to be an adult. He died in 1784. He was a great composer and keyboardist. We do know about the sons that lived to adulthood, of course. Yeah. We don't know much about the daughters, but we do know about the sons. So he ended up being a great composer and keyboardist. Johann Christoph, child number three, he was born in February 1713, and he unfortunately died at birth. Maria Sophia was Johann Christoph's twin. So she had twins in 1713. She also did not live very long. She only lived about a month. And Bach, this is the really sad part of the story. Bach was away on music business during this time. So he was likely not present for the birth or death of these babies, which is really sad for everybody. And there was a comment in what I was reading. They were like, yeah, he lost a lot of kids. And, you know, this was kind of common for the day. But like, he also, like, there would have been a lot of grief happening during this time, especially the twins. Those would have been their first babies that they lost. So I can't imagine having 20 pregnancies and only having, I think, 7 of their kids make it to adulthood. Like, that's rough for anybody. So, whew. So then Carl Philipp Emanuel, he probably is a familiar name to anybody who plays music. He was born in March 1714. He is a very important composer, but since this is about the wives, I'm not going to tell you his story. You can go look him up yourself or go play his music if you know him. He also had a nice long life and wrote a whole bunch of stuff, and everybody knows him. Their next child was Johann Gottfried Bernhardt. He was born in May of 1715. If you're keeping track of these dates, that's almost a baby every year so far. He was a disappointment. What? He was an undutiful son, according to J.S. Bach. So that one is not a compliment.
He wasn't even named after him.
I know, right? That's
especially disappointing.
Yeah. And then their last child is Leopold Augustus, who was born in November of 1718, and he unfortunately died less than a year later. So those were their 7 children, 4 of whom lived on. We don't really know much of anything else other than the fact that she was a singer. She was pretty happy with J.S. Bach, and she had a bunch of kids. Her death is also a mystery, which is just horrible. We don't know when she died, like the date that she died or how she died. What we do know is that she was buried on July 7th, 1720 at the age of 35. Like, even in those days, that's young. Yeah. So, and J.S. Bach was also 35. So he was a pretty young widower with several kids at this point. Bach was at the Carlsbad Spa with his employer, Prince Leopold of Anhalt-Köthen, when she died. They were on like doing some business kind of stuff, and they were there for several months. And she was in good health when he left. And then when he came back, he didn't know that she had died. So he found out when he got back from that trip that she had died and already buried by the time he got back. Like, that's crushing.
Oh my goodness.
To like
goodness,
be all to come home and like your spouse is
Wow.
That's so sad. She is buried at the Old Cemetery in Köthen. And the cemetery was abandoned in the 1800s, but her gravesite was marked. And so it's a park now. You can actually go see her gravesite. It's in this like little tree grove kind of thing. That's fun that you can actually know where she's buried. The same does not go for Anna Magdalena, as we'll see. And Bach, this is documented that he was like distraught, which is absolutely understandable when something like this happens. And he wrote this chaconne final movement of his Partita in D for solo violin, which, as I've read, was written out of his grief over her death. I don't know if that's like fact. Someone who knows more about this than I do can fact check me on that one. But it is like haunting. There's part of it that's these chords on open strings on the violin. And I listened to it on YouTube, and the description was like, this is a primal scream in violin. And this is basically like the grief that Bach had over losing his wife. So, but then we have Anna Magdalena Bach, who comes into the picture not that long afterwards. They marry about a year after Maria Barbara dies. But Anna Magdalena was born on September 22nd, 1701 in Zeitz, Saxony. She is 16 years younger than J.S. Bach. There is an age difference here. She was born Anna Wilken. And she was born into a very musical family, which serves Bach very, very well during their marriage. Her dad
What year were they married again?
They're married in 1721.
1721.
Yes. Okay. Her father was a professional trumpeter and she was a professional singer and chamber musician. So she definitely got the music genes for sure. She was a very strong woman, had very good musical training, probably knew Bach professionally at Köthen while he was the Kapellmeister there. And according to church records, they were both godparents at a baptism at Köthen in September of 1721. And then they got married in December of 1721, which is kind of cute. I don't know if they like were already kind of sort of engaged at this point or if they had like a little meet cute at this baptism thing and they were like, we're married. I don't know the story to that.
So I would like to be matchmakers, you know, think about inviting friends to be godparents and could sparks could
fly. Yeah.
They could. You never know. It. Yep. What a way to meet. So she was 20 and he was 36 when they got married. And she became the Frau Kapellmeisterin Bach to bear J.S. Bach's title, which means she also would not have done like housekeeping or, you know, nursed her own babies or anything because she was the woman of the house. And the Maria Barbara sister was still living with them as their housekeeper at this point. And in 1722, so just after they were married, Bach gave her a Klavierbüchlein, a little keyboard book, the first Anna Magdalena notebook. And this is the one that I think is lesser known. I think the one that's more well known is the second one, which we'll get to in a minute. But out of this first one, there's 25 sheets that survive today, probably only about a third of the original. It would have been a lot larger than what we have today. J.S. Bach became Thomas Cantor in 1723 in Leipzig. So this was a big year of change for them. They would have moved to Leipzig and J.S. Bach got his like super famous job being the Thomas Cantor at St. Thomas Church. And it was the birth of their first of many children. So I want to know, though, I don't think I'll ever know this, but I really want to know if Bach composed his cantatas and like soprano solo arias and things with Anna Magdalena in mind, because she was a professional singer. Like, I want to know what her voice sounded like. I want to know if he composed for her and like had her voice in his head when he was composing. I don't know. It's just a really cute thing that I would love if was true, but I won't know that. It's a story I tell myself in my head, though.
I think it's legitimate to ponder this because Bach has just a beautiful way of writing lines for women.
Yes.
Both sopranos and altos. And the fact that he is able to do that so well suggests an intimacy with the female voice, you know, someone who loved and respected the women that would be singing the part.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, a lot of the parts would have been sung by boys, so there's that. But I think being married to a singer couldn't have hurt his ability to do that so well.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure, like, those cute little scenes in movies that they make up, because I don't actually know if they're real or not, where he's, like, writing a piece of music. Yeah. He's like, hey, wife, sing this for me and see if it sounds good or something. I don't know. I hope that's true. Like, anyway, Bach compiled his second, more elaborate and more famous Anna Magdalena notebook in 1725. And this was copied, most of it was copied by Anna Magdalena herself. And a lot of it is composers besides J.S. Bach. So some are earliest known compositions by Carl Philipp Emanuel. And it's kind of like this domestic musical scrapbook of things that she would have enjoyed playing and that he knew that she would have enjoyed playing. And it's very cute. That is the famous Anna Magdalena notebook. But like, can you imagine what the music would have been like in this household? At this point, they have several kids. Most of them are old enough to be like playing their own instruments. And they're all furiously copying all of this music for all these cantatas that he's writing. It's just like, it blows my mind a little bit how much music must have been happening.
I can't decide whether I want more for them to have like several harpsichords in the house or just one. Because I feel like this cacophony, but one, there'd be a different kind of cacophony of all the young musicians arguing over whose turn it was to sit on
right.
Which happens in my house sometimes.
Right. Or you have like three kids squeezed onto a bench, like all trying to play their own stuff. And it's just,
two, and they were in separate rooms and the kids got along.
Fridolina stayed on as housekeeper for them until she died in 1729. So she would have been with them about 7 or 8 years after Anna Magdalena and J.S. Bach got married. But then when Fridolina died, she was replaced by Bach's eldest daughter, Katharina, who was 21 in 1729. So the oldest daughter became the housekeeper in this house. I like to think it's because, like, she wanted to hang out with everyone still and got to be useful in a way and also still be involved in all the music, because I'm sure that's that.
You know what,
fun.
Though? Also, I feel like that the fact that the oldest daughter wanted to stay on and take that role makes me think that Fridolina loved her life. Like, she wasn't doing it and being made to feel like, oh, you're the hired help. And, you know, it wasn't a hard thing. She wanted to stay. And these are her nieces and nephews that she's caring for. And she loved them. And she wanted to be part of it and be part of the family in that way. And the fact that I can think that because the oldest daughter chose to stay on. It could be something else, not as happy. But I feel like the fact that the daughter wanted to do that and chose to do that bodes well, because Bach would have had, she had a name.
Oh, yeah.
So if she didn't want to stay on in that role, she could have married off.
Probably, yeah.
So
it's also interesting that Katharina was only like 7 years older than his wife, Anna Magdalena. They were only 7 years apart. I don't know what that dynamic would have been like to have a stepmom that's only 7 years older than you. Mm-hmm. So,
you know, the fact that she stayed suggests that they.
Yep. Again.
And that she
implies it was a good, healthy one. Yeah.
Yeah.
For this woman who was still, no doubt, bearing children, had regular.
Oh, we're going to get to that in a second.
Okay. All right. I will pin in that. But I think it says that this was a loving family.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right.
Vibrant home.
I think you're right.
Yeah, I think so. Yes, so Anna Magdalena was basically constantly having babies between 1723 and 1742, which,
wow.
And she gave birth to her first 9 children in 9.5 years by the time she was 31. Wow. And that's woman power.
Sturdy Frau. Oh my.
Yes. Yes.
Sturdy. Yes.
I mean, some women are just built this way. They can do this and it doesn't affect them as much as other people. People are just built different.
Yep.
So Christiana Sophia Henrietta, that's a really pretty name. She was born in spring of 1723. She unfortunately died when she was 3. Gottfried Heinrich was born in February 1724. He was intellectually disabled, but he was a very loved part of the family and a very good keyboard player. And he lived till he was 38. Next child was Christian Gottfried. He was born in April 1725. He also sadly died when he was 3. Elizabeth Juliana Friederike was born in April 1726. She got married to Bach's pupil, Johann Christoph Altnickel. So she did get married off to a musician in the house. She lived a pretty long life, died in 1781 at the age of 55. Ernestus Andreas was born in October of 1727. He sadly lived only a few days. Regina Johanna was born in October 1728. She lived until she was 4. Christiana Benedicta, born in January of 1730. She also sadly only lived a few days. Can you imagine this? Year after year, bearing a child. Ooh. And still having more children. Like, that says something about what you believe. And they're Lutheran, obviously, right? So it's like super powerful witness to what we believe. Where was I? I can't remember. Christiana Dorothea was born in March 1731. She only lived about 17 months. And then Johann Christoph Friedrich was born in June 1732, and he did live to adulthood. He was called the Bückeberg Bach, which is really funny, because he spent most of his life in Bückeberg, It's a fun name. And he was one of the sons that went on to become a composer. So he ends up, there's more history on him that you can read for yourself. But interestingly, he was born the same year as Haydn. He died at 62. So he lived a pretty nice long life with some really remarkable music that we don't really know today. He wrote a lot of symphonies, sacred and secular vocal music, chamber music, keyboard works, mostly secular stuff. He was a court musician, so he wrote a lot, and we apparently don't know a lot of it today. And then Johann August Abraham was born in November 1733. He also sadly died just after a few days. Johann Christian, the London Bach, was born in September 1735. This is the most interesting story of any of these children. So I will tell you a very short amount about him because he also was a composer, no surprise. But he went to Italy and renounced his Lutheran faith and became a Catholic. What? And he settled...
Italy.
I know, right? He settled in London then. So he went to Italy, became a Catholic.
He couldn't go home.
No! No!
No.
Anna Magdalena would have worked for him.
Yes.
Right. It's very interesting that he settles in London, though, because Catholics in England at this time were...
persecuted.
Yeah. Mm. Like, why would you go to London if you're a Catholic when Catholics were very much, like... persona non grata over there. So I don't know. There's more story here that I didn't look up, but I would be curious to know why he did that. He was a very, very influential musician there. But this is also where it gets really interesting. So there is an American connection here. He wrote a harpsichord concerto in 1763 for Queen Charlotte, consort of George III, who is famous in our history. So
this is
like soap opera stuff right here. I really want to know this whole story because it had to have been very interesting at a time when the church in England would not have been very friendly to a Catholic, but he's writing stuff for the queen consort. I want to know. He also became friends with Mozart, which is just a fun little tidbit of history. And he only lived to 46, but he had composed a lot of music, a lot of Italian operas, concertos, symphonies, chamber works, church music. So
interesting.
Yeah. We have two more. So Johanna Carolina was born October 1737, and she died at 43. And then Regina Susanna was their last child. She was born in February of 1742 when Anna Magdalena was 40. She was her 13th child, but Regina Susanna died at 67, a nice long life. But like the rest of the daughters, we know basically nothing about her. So there you have it. 20 kids. Several of them lived to adulthood, but a lot of them also died in infancy, which is just kind of a sad part of the story.
Yeah.
So through all of this, I mean, she was pregnant most of her time until J.S. Bach died. No, until 1742. There were a few years there. She was an invaluable part of J.S. Bach's musicianship, things that were happening. She basically was like this professional assistant to him in the work that she did for him to help. I mean, because he was writing a cantata like every week. So an insane amount of music, because all of this, I mean, this is all handwritten, hand copied. There were no like Xerox machines back in those days. So all of the different pieces for all the musicians and vocalists for all of these were hand copied. And Anna Magdalena did a lot of that copying. She wrote out a lot of those instrumental parts. The kids started to help too as they got older. And J.S. Bach died in 1750 at the age of 65. Anna Magdalena was only 48 at this time. So she was also widowed fairly young. That's not that old to be a widow. Nine of their children survived to adulthood. So Anna Magdalena would have had nine children and stepchildren. The Bach estate ended up divided between Anna Magdalena and the nine kids. She ended up dying a pauper. So the kids didn't really support her. They didn't help her out at all. She was dependent mostly on charity for her final years. And she only lived for another 10 years. She died at 58 in an almshouse in Leipzig in February 1760. She was buried in an unmarked pauper's grave in Leipzig's Johanneskirche. And J.S. Bach and many of her children are also buried there. So she got to be buried next to all of her family, which means at the resurrection, they're all going to rise together. So that's like the best part of the story. They're all together in the grave. J.S. Bach's grave was forgotten also after that time, which I find really interesting. But it was discovered during church renovation in 1894. Her grave was not discovered, though.
I mean, I know happy that she is buried in the same cemetery with all of her children and her husband. But at the same time, it's like an unmarked pauper's grave. Like, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do better.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Do better. Well, and it gets worse. I should have trigger warning this at the beginning. In World War II, the church and the graveyard were destroyed by bombing. So like the entire place just doesn't exist anymore. So, I mean, we believe they will all rise again, even though their graves are probably not even in one piece anymore. But it's just really sad that the graveyard doesn't even exist anymore because it got bombed.
Yeah.
But this whole story it reminds me how little we know of pretty incredible people, especially pretty incredible women throughout history. These two women were supporting arguably like one of the most or the most brilliant musician composer in history. And we still know so little about her or about both of them and their children. And what is interesting, historians began to research her again in the 1960s. So there's some fan fiction going on from the 1960s. Some revisionists say that she actually composed some of J.S. Bach's later music, which has been debunked in places. But there's a classicfm.com article that we can share if you want to read about what people are saying about how like, Anna Magdalena actually wrote a lot of his music. And other historians are like, yeah, no, that's definitely not it. But it's an interesting little piece of revisionist history.
It would explain some of how he was able to be so prolific.
It would.
I mean, that is an amazing, the output from him is so amazing that I would almost be tempted to give credence to a theory like that just because it makes it more believable.
Yeah.
All that music came from one study.
Yeah. The other thing is there's a fictionalized film from 1968 called The Chronicle of Anna Magdalena Bach. So literal fan fiction of her life in this film. I didn't actually go find it. I'm not sure it's in English. It might be in either French or German, but I kind of want to go find it and watch it just to see. Because we don't know a lot about her life. So most of that is just going to be, you know, the things that I was making up in my head too. Yeah. So. So four of their children were famous composers: Wilhelm Friedemann, Carl Philipp Emanuel, Johann Christoph Friedrich, and Johann Christian. But interestingly, according to the internet, there are no known descendants of Bach alive today, which is wild. His great-granddaughter, Frau Carolina Augusta Wilhelmina Ritter, died on May 13th, 1871, and she was his last known descendant. So maybe there's some out there somewhere that we just don't know, that the internet hasn't found yet. But
so it seems like his children took after him in being prolific with their music, but maybe less so with their families.
That's what it sounds like. There are some Bach family trees online also. If you're really like, I really need to know more about this entire family and all of these kids, you can find those. Very easy. There are a few blog posts that I'll share with you. There's one from grahamsmusic.net. Like, huge shout out for that blog post. He's an Australian musician. He had a lot of cool details in his blog post. So we can share that one for sure, because I didn't include everything. But that one has a lot more detail than Wikipedia. There's also bachcantatas.com that has just a lot of information about all things Bach, obviously. So, and we'll share that Classic FM. There's a lot of fun stuff on Classic FM. So
yeah,
that's all I have for you. A fun, but also kind of depressing story. Sorry.
You know what though? They can't all be fun and lively.
That is true.
You gotta remember the whole person. And yeah. No, I'm glad to have learned more.
It may have ended kind of sadly, but doesn't take away the fact that there were 20 little souls being raised up by these women, and some of the most soaring, magnificent, and faith-filled music ever written came out of that house.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that no amount of sadness will take away that.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
And that legacy, I mean, that lives on globally now. Like, there's people in non-Christian countries that are singing about Jesus because Bach's music is so amazing.
Yeah.
Like the Holy Spirit works in these ways too. So pretty incredible.
It is.
So there you have it. Another story time with Sarah Day. This has been fun. I always like researching these.
Yeah. No, that was great. I enjoyed it.
Well, ladies, share your comments on this Story Time with Sarah episode in our Facebook group on the post for this. We'll also share some of this on our Instagram page at Lutheran Ladies Lounge. You can follow us there as well. You can sign up for our e-newsletter in the show notes for this episode or by sending us an email, lutheranladies@kfuo.org. You can find all of our episodes at kfuo.org/Lutheran Ladies Lounge or on your favorite podcasting app or on the KFUO radio app. You're listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rachel.
Views and opinions expressed on the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast may not represent the official position of the management or ownership of KFUO Radio, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. The Lutheran Ladies Lounge is produced by KFUO Radio and available at kfuo.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and leave a review for us too. If you love the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast, consider financially supporting our producer, KFUO Radio, so we can keep doing what we do. Find out how at kfuo.org/give. The Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast is underwritten in part by Lutheran Heritage Foundation. LHF translates, publishes, distributes, and introduces books that are Bible-based, Christ-centered, and Reformation-driven. Learn more about their global ministry and how to support their projects at lhfmissions.org.